Every revolution starts in the minds of the people. Arm yourself for the war of ideas. Take back your life. Take back your liberty. Tom Mullen Talks Freedom.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tom Mullen Talks Freedom. Today, I'm happy to be joined once again by my fellow Buffalonian, fellow St. Joseph's Collegiate Institute graduate, James Ostrowski, and also most famous libertarian in Buffalo, although that is a short list. I first discovered James when I discovered Lou Rockwell's site and saw some of his writing there. James, welcome back to Tom Mullen Talks Freedom.
Hey, it's great to be back, Tom. Thanks.
So I want to get to Trump and his legal problems because Sure. You are also, of course, an attorney who has defended people against the state and won. But I understand that you went to the Libertarian National Convention, and although I did a podcast about this last week, I'd like to ask you firsthand, what was your impression of the whole thing, both the Trump reception, the nomination procedure, everything? How did it hit you?
There were a lot of people there. I remember looking, I was on the floor of the convention. I looked around, I said, this seems like a major party convention. And there was a lot of media there. And there's a lot of observers there like me who had no official role. It's pretty exciting. And I just missed Kennedy. I got in, I think, Friday afternoon. I just missed Kennedy. I did hear him speak in Buffalo. He's a very impressive guy from his political perspective. And I saw Ramaswamy. And I saw the whole Trump thing. I filmed it on Facebook Live from the press gallery and almost got bumped over by one of the protesters. It's pretty funny. I was fighting over a chair because my old blazer was on that chair. I wasn't going to give that old thing up. So I thought it was very exciting. And it was a good opportunity to draw attention to the party. Not everything went smoothly, obviously. And I didn't agree with everything that went on. I don't mind booing people, but I think when you're talking over people, I'm just against that for any number of reasons. But overall, I thought it was an exciting convention. I hadn't been to a convention in a couple of years. And I thought overall it was a positive development just to draw attention to the party.
Yeah, and I guess I agree with you. It's great to see all that media there. I thought it was a great move to have those other candidates come under the pretense they were speaking to libertarian concerns. And actually, Trump did that. The part about Trump's speech that might have been misleading was he left out all the bad stuff in his platform, all the stuff we disagree with on his stump speech. He didn't talk about any of that. In that respect, it would have been hard to wait for him to say something bad and then boo. But here's how it hit me watching from home, because I wasn't there. It just seemed like any garden variety leftist mob who would just be booing Trump, not for any good reason, because he's a racist or whatever they've dreamed of, a Russian spy, a threat to democracy, all the crap that's not true about him, and not booing him for his dumb economic ideas, his overreaching with executive authority, his going back on his promises on foreign policy. That's all open. As far as I'm concerned, that's all fair game when Trump's in the room. Did it hit you the same way being there or no?
I was in the back in my section. I noticed two people were really shouting over Trump. That's what I object to. I just think, first of all, I'm trying to hear the guy. And he is the guest of the libertarians, whether you like him or not. But in my section, there were only two. I didn't know who they were. My understanding is that it was open to the public. That's why there were 30 or 40 or 50 Trump people there who were on my left. And ironically, the Trump people hurt Trump in the sense that when they heard whoever was protesting Trump, it could have been libertarian. I know there were some libertarians, but there could have been virtually anybody. It could have been Biden people. I don't know.
Sure.
Nobody took a poll of who they were. But then the Trump people started making cheering noise. And again, and all that did was it made it more difficult to hear Trump. Now, to his credit, Trump is a veteran. he's wrestled people, right? He's not exactly a shy dude. And he just kept talking. He kept his cool. They say he was a little upset. I'm not surprised. My wife on TV thought that he looked a little red in the face, but it was a tough crowd. But he just kept talking and got through it. And it was a good idea that it was a relatively short speech because, God, if it was one of Trump's typical two-hour stem winders, it would have gotten really ugly. But, you know, I did a podcast on it the other day at the White House, and I pointed out that there were 1,700 people in the room. About 150 people were booing, severely booing. And Trump was really talking to the million to anywhere from 1 million to 3 million libertarians, depending on which polls you believe or how you define libertarian. I think Trump was talking to people who weren't in the room. And in that sense, and if you read his speech, and I didn't read it, I listened to it twice. It's quite libertarian. He didn't address all of his shortcomings, and the spending was one of the things that I think killed him, the unrestrained spending even before COVID, and then COVID hit and that got it worse. But it's pretty darn libertarian speech. And I thought as the speech went on, he got more cheers and fewer boos because the audience started to, I think, realize that he's trying to appeal to us. He didn't get everybody, of course. But I think he was talking to the people outside the room. And many people have pointed out that the selection of who is perceived to be a left libertarian certainly opens the door for Trump to get some soft libertarian, small L libertarian votes, which is, I think, why he was there. And ironically, about a couple of days before he went, I did a podcast talking about RFK. And I said, well, at least RFK has reached out to the libertarians. He went to Pork Fest and so on. And Trump should reach out to the libertarians. I said, look, you lost by 40,000 votes last time. You need all the votes you can get. So sure. I think it's a very smart move. I think he was pissed off at the reaction, but the long-term gain is there, I think.
I was just so disappointed because one of the things he said, again, just trying to butter up or appease libertarians, is that they're very thoughtful people. And the 150 libertarians in the room booing him indiscriminately while he's talking, no matter what he said, just made first-time viewers, people that never heard of this party before, think exactly the opposite. It just came across on television like he could have just as well have been speaking at Berkeley or Columbia with some leftist mob of brain-dead college kids out there just booing and shouting him down. But it's overall, it's positive that the media was there. And just one other thing that I think I mentioned last week, the fact that the media loved that they booed him. If MSNBC loves what you're doing, then that should tell you you're not doing something right. But any last words on the Trump speech before we get to the nomination?
Smart move by the chair, Angela McArdle, and smart move by Trump going in. I think it's going to help his campaign. I do think that the reception, the deliberate, intentional, planned attempt to obstruct the speech did not portray the Libertarian Party in a good light. But again, it was a fairly small minority of the people.
Yeah, and of course, but people at home don't know that. All they can see is Trump and hear these yahoos booing. As far as the nomination goes, Tom Woods, I think this is his line, either he originated it or he said it before, and I apologize to its originator if that's not right, but he says something to the effect of, no matter who you vote for, you always end up with John McCain.
Yeah.
And it seems for the general election, it seems like no matter who you vote for in the Libertarian Party, you always end up with Nicholas Sarwark. What the heck happened down there? The Mises Caucus had taken over this party, and we still got somebody Sarwark would be real happy with.
The funny thing is, I was so busy just like making contacts. I was really there to promote books, past and future. And I was actually on the highway when the nomination, it went to so many different ballots. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I think that some of the Rechtenwald people left because things dragged on. I don't know if it was deliberate to stall the convention. I heard that it was. I don't know. I was just an observer. And I think they nominated a candidate who's not going to get many votes. What can we say?
And I don't really care how many votes he gets. What I care more about is that somebody delivers a powerful libertarian message. And I'm not going to say that he can't do that. Let me ask you, did you see the speeches by him and by Rechtenwald?
I filmed Rechtenwald's speech myself. I don't think I saw Chase's speech. I think I saw him at the convention in Watkins Glen, New York. But frankly, there's so many candidates on the stage. It's a bit of a blur to me. But he's all I can say is he appears to be a left libertarian. I would never describe myself as right wing for about 7,000 different reasons. But I don't think libertarians should go in a left wing direction. We've already tried that. Murray Rothbard tried that in the 60s. I've been trying it for 40 years. There doesn't seem to be any friends on the left in my experience. I've got viciously trashed by the left in Buffalo simply for opposing the lockdown.
Yeah.
And I'm always willing to talk to these people. When I'm on Twitter and I talk to a leftist, it usually lasts about two rounds. I make a point, they get angry, I respond, they insult, and I said that's the end of that. I don't sense, to me, the core of leftism is equality, and the core of libertarianism is liberty. I don't really see the connection. I think the whole concept of equality, even if you open the door to, first of all, one of my books, I attack the concept of equal opportunity. And I use the example of my father was a criminal trial judge. Try to have an equal opportunity with me in a courtroom. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I haven't been beaten. I'm not saying that people aren't better. But the fact that I go in with having debated a guy at the dinner table over the law when I was 12 gives me a little bit of advantage. So, and even equality under the law, it's for some reason, when you let equality under the tent, pretty soon that's the only thing you're doing. So not particularly into leftism these days.
And I guess what I said last week and what I still stand by is that right now the left has all the power. Okay. They control all the institutions, not just the government, but the media. They control education, they control Hollywood, they control just about anything, the music industry. So any party that is campaigning to gain the votes of people who are unhappy with the status quo cannot be out there checking boxes on all their weirdest upset. And right. Really what disappointed me the most, I didn't even know who the guy was until the convention, and I had to go back and find out, is the COVID record going along with the masks and the social distancing and posting about he's going to only have 10 people at his house and we're all going to sit 6 feet. Come on. This is no threat to the establishment. And it's not going to attract people who don't like the establishment. So I do think in his defense, he makes a better presentation than Michael Rechtenwald. I really was concerned that we were going to nominate another boring academic like we did 4 years ago with Joe Jorgensen, who's a solid libertarian, but just not inspiring. And honestly, I don't find Michael Rechtenwald inspiring as a speaker. His presentation, you probably remember the Brady Bunch, Jim, because you're almost as old as I am.
Of course. And I've been before the Brady Bunch.
Right. And there was the whole thing where Greg wants to be a rock and roll star, Johnny Bravo. And the guy actually listens to him singing, but he's actually looking at him to see if he fits the suit. And he signs Greg Brady, changes his name to Johnny Bravo. And that's all he says is, you fit the suit. And that's another thing we need, is somebody who fits the suit. And what I mean by that is somebody that the average normie out there who's never heard of the Libertarian Party, and here's our candidate. Yep. Let me see what they're like. Can you imagine this guy as president? And I'll tell you, back in 2016, when all the libertarians were on board with John McAfee, and no one loved him more than me. I interviewed him. I thought he was awesome. He's just a wild man.
Yeah.
But nobody could imagine him as president. And I thought we should have nominated Austin Peterson. He was a little young. Some people have a few picayune problems with this or that. He's a little conservative. Yeah, but you tune in, you got McAfee there with a machete in one hand and a bottle of whiskey in the other, where you got Austin Peterson, right? He looks good in the suit. He's a little young, as I said, but you could imagine him sitting in at a desk signing bills. This time around, I think Chase does actually fit the suit when he's not wearing the rainbow mask and hugging a drag queen, but that's all people are going to see with him. They're going to drag up those pictures.
Yeah, I like Austin Peterson. He's pretty much left the party. Or did the party leave him? And a lot of people wanted Dave Smith, who's an excellent communicator, and he just decided he didn't want to run. Who can blame him? I told Rectin, I've run for office a few times, not at this level, and it's exhausting. And it's just a tremendous sacrifice, and God bless the people who do run. But we're stuck with what we have. I'm not a big believer in electoral politics anyway. I wish the party would read my book, Direct Citizen Action, and follow it like a Bible, but they're not. We'll just have to see what happens.
All right. So I think hopefully you've exercised any demons you needed to about the convention. I feel like that's it for me. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. I do want to talk about Trump and his present legal predicament. I think there's a lot of people, and I've asked some other lawyers who don't even know for sure what the answers to these are, which is, all right, number one, he's at this moment, he's convicted of several felonies. A fact that he's not, he can't run for president, or is it just that if he does win the election, he can't be sworn in? What is the disability here as far as...
There's no disability. In fact, somebody today on one of the programs mentioned Eugene V. Debs, who I think was in jail. He was pardoned by Warren Harding after that son of a bitch Wilson left office. So no, it's just U.S. citizen, natural born, whatever that means, 35 years old. And I think you got to be, I think that's it.
People who get convicted of felonies have to go and get some certificate of relief from the state in order to hold public office?
Because there's many, I had a case where a guy was convicted of some dumb misdemeanor and they tried to get him off out of the office or off the ballot because he committed a crime of moral turpitude. But those are state and local offices, and there has to be some disqualifier in the local and state law. But the Constitution is the Constitution. It's pretty clear that Congress can't amend it when it comes to qualifications. There was the famous term limits case where Clarence Thomas wrote this really great dissent. And he said, no, the states can add term limits onto Congress. But the majority said no. No, he's free and clear to run. I don't think there's any question about that.
Oh, that's...
He might not be able to vote for himself, which is pretty fun.
There you go. Because in some states you can't vote if you get convicted, and other ones they've said, even if you're convicted, what if you finish probation or something, then you can vote then, or what? No, how does it work?
I've actually litigated this over petition carriers. My understanding is once you serve your sentence, you're back on the rolls if you choose. Just a little technicality here. There's no judgment of conviction yet. So anything that hinges upon having a judgment of conviction wouldn't take place because he hasn't been sentenced yet. Now, even before he's sentenced, you can make a motion for a new trial called a 330 motion. I've made like exactly one of them in my career. It's a very strange animal. But I would hope that his lawyers would make a 330 motion, not only to preserve issues, raise issues for appeal, but God forbid, stall.
You said two things. Let me just make sure people understand. Sure. Yeah. First of all, you said there's no judgment of conviction. So you get convicted, the jury says guilty as charged, and then they schedule sentencing. That's one of the things I was wondering about.
Yeah, sure.
Is it the case, though, that the case isn't really closed until sentence is passed?
Because you don't even have to file a notice of appeal until the, quote, judgment is entered, which is really... the sentence. The clerk does some paperwork, but when you're sentenced, that's considered to be when the, quote, judgment. The law is so complicated and ridiculous, but the quote judgment is entered that day, and that starts your 30 days. I'm sure the audience wants to know how long he has to appeal. 30 days to file a notice of appeal. That notice will be filed immediately. Well, if you probably want to talk about sentencing and so on, but they'll have the notice of appeal ready to file, ready to run. Our system is so Byzantine. My recollection, I worked in those buildings. I think he's going to have to run across the street or have a runner go to the county clerk's office, which is, by the way, get into architecture. Remember The Godfather, the guy who was shot on the steps?
Yeah.
That's 60 Center Street. That's where the clerk's office is. That's where the civil state Supreme Court is. And he's actually across the street in an ugly old building across the street where they try criminal cases. So when he's sentenced, they'll run over, file a notice of appeal, because if the judge whacks him somehow, he's going to have to get a stay of appeal. And again, I'm sure you want your listeners to understand the mechanics here.
Let me ask you something. What if there was someone out there who kept a log of every single thing you did every minute of the day? That would probably creep you out. Well, that's exactly what happens every time you go online. Your internet provider stores logs of every website you've ever visited and can legally sell this data to anyone. Worse yet, the government can obtain your data via bulk FISA order, even if you're not personally suspected of any crime. That's why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your internet provider can't see or log what you do online. Visit expressvpn.com/Mullen right now and find out how you can get 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Mullen. Protect your data and get 3 months for free today.
Is it the case he can't file a notice of appeal until he's sentenced?
Correct.
Okay.
You could file anything. I assume the clerk would take it. It would be a nullity, though.
Okay.
And you risk not filing it properly. And so if the judge sentences him to a jail or prison, they're going to go to the appellate division in the first department. That's Manhattan and the Bronx. The appellate division physically is up around 30th, 34th and Madison. So you're talking like a couple miles away. It's mostly e-filed anyway these days. So they'll file that. They'll have the judge ready to stay if the judge chooses to stay the sentence. And it's going to be a pretty exciting day as to what's going to happen.
Now, before he's sentenced, you mentioned this 330 motion. What exactly is that?
It's just a motion for a new trial before sentence. A motion for a new trial after sentence is just a 440 motion, of which I've done many of those because I do post-conviction relief, which is a lot of fun. But there is this motion for 330 where he can get a preview of the appeal and maybe get some stuff in the record for the appeal that wouldn't otherwise be in the record, although that's dubious if you do that. But if it's in the record, it's in the record. I don't think anybody's going to argue it. But so there are moves he can pull. But the main thing is, what's the judge going to do? The judge going to give him a conditional discharge on the theory that putting him into jail could spark civil unrest. And for many other reasons, Secret Service would have to go in there. Are they going to put him on probation, which is pretty silly? He's going to be visiting. They could take his passport. Who knows? But normally in New York State, particularly George Floyd, they're not giving anybody jail unless there's serious violent crimes. But the guy is Trump. But normally, if his name wasn't Trump, 77-year-old former president. And by the way, every president has incurred a physical risk of being shot, if you do the statistics, or shot at. People talk about it. Well, he dodged Vietnam. I know, but he had a job where 15% of the people have been shot at. So I guess he must have some courage. So these are the arguments I would make if I was his lawyer. But if the guy, he could give him like a day in jail, he could give him a year in jail, he could give him like a state prison time. I think that would be madness. And I think the whole case is insane and frivolous and stupid and illegal. I think the whole case is criminal, just so the audience knows where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I want to get to the whole idea that these are felonies and how they got there. But I think it's just for my own curiosity. I'm sitting here wondering, I'm glad you answered that. So just to restate what you said, the disability or the prohibition from holding a public office, there has to be some law in the books that says if you're convicted of X crime, then here are the things you can't do. And that pretty much any felony, like at the state level, was going to preclude you from all these different state offices, but they just can't pass a law like that for the presidency because it's clearly defined in the Constitution. Is that right?
Yeah. And also there was Adam Clayton Powell, congressman from Harlem. I think he was in jail when he got elected once. And I'm pretty sure it was a felony. That's all. If it's not in the Constitution, it's not there, and he's not ineligible to run.
What do you understand is the maximum jail time he could face given the combined 34 different counts or whatever they are?
Yeah, it's all the same transaction. So he's eligible for concurrent sentences, and that it would be draconian to not do it that way. I think it's an e-felony, which is pretty minor BS, probably like 1 to 3 or 1 to 4, something like that.
Years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But of course, any real sentence of jail or incarceration, other than I'm sentencing you to spend an hour in the court lockup, I think would be disastrous for the country, frankly. And just an embarrassment to the state of New York, which is notoriously lenient in sentences for really bad people who've committed like violent crimes.
Yeah, I don't know if any of that matters with him. They've already demonstrated they're willing to throw precedents out the window, even to get to a felony on these. And maybe you could talk about, I think I understand that the idea is these are all misdemeanors, but because he did them in order to further a felony, then that makes them felonies. Can you sort that out?
That's basically it. They had to show that he falsified records in pursuit of another felony. And the controversy was apparently, and this is pretty amazing, apparently Trump's people didn't know which felony they were talking about, and the judge told the jury they didn't have to be unanimous on the felony, whether it was a federal election law violation or falsifying records so they can cover up other records, which is a felony.
What was the prosecution alleging the felony was?
I guess they were following the jury. They won the battle of the jury instruction, so I assume, I haven't read their summation, but I assume they were arguing, well, any of these three things.
Which were what?
Some sort of a tax violation, falsifying other records than the 34. But I think they were focusing on the election law violation. Now, the thing about the election law, so we don't really know what the jury found, because it apparently wasn't. I've debated this on Twitter. Nobody could tell me what. I said, I don't know what crime he was convicted of, and you don't either. And people argued with me, of course, but they said it was 1 of 3. I said, okay, so that's my point. You don't know which. So the lack of unanimity on the verdict is one of the grounds for appeal, because we've always understood that a verdict has to be unanimous. So that's going to be one of the many grounds for appeal. I know Trump put on an FEC expert. And I think the expert wanted to say that an expenditure of this nature is personal and you can't use campaign funds for it. So he got whipsawed because they claimed he should have reported it. But if he had reported it, they would have charged him with improper use of campaign funds. I think John Edwards was put on trial for a similar charge. And he got acquitted because he argued that this was a personal expense and it didn't have to be reported or whatever. It was a similar case. I don't remember all the details a few years ago.
So what you're saying, though, Trump is in a position where they say this was campaign spending because it was there to help you get elected and you didn't report it. But then again, you're not allowed to report that particular kind of expenditure.
It's not a campaign expenditure. And if it had been, it would have been improperly using funds, just like taking a vacation unrelated to campaign trip. Any pure, there's a gray area in campaign finance, which is well known, and at least in the state of New York. But anything that's has no connection to the campaign, anything that's personal, you would be wrong to use campaign funds and then report it. If you don't use the campaign funds, you don't have to report it. And so I think that's Trump's argument. And I think that most of the people on everything's broken down on political lines. Even the people from the left who support Trump are now considered to be biased in favor of Trump. But a lot of pretty smart lawyers. Alan Dershowitz is one of the smartest lawyers. And I'm not anybody to praise lawyers who don't deserve it. Believe me, I'm super harsh on lawyers. He's a great lawyer. He's been a great lawyer for decades. Jonathan Turley is good. And several of the other lesser known people who've criticized this case, they followed it closer than I did. But I believe, I agree with their analysis based on the fact that they have a lot more knowledge of the facts. I have followed the case casually, more than casually, but not as much as they have. I think the case is a joke. I think that I would want to drill down into how they got all this information. I think that they remember back when they were going after his tax returns and his business records and all this stuff. To me, I thought that was absolutely outrageous because it was obviously political targeting. The Supreme Court just ruled that what they did to the NRA was illegal. Of course it's illegal. I'm a First Amendment lawyer. I've won cases involving First Amendment retaliation. This is obviously First Amendment retaliation. It's also a violation of the Fourth Amendment and the privacy of records. So they just rummaged through Trump's stuff without probable cause. And
just see what we could find, right?
Yeah, there's a book. I think Ayn Rand talked about this. And there's also a book, Four Felonies a Day or something like that. Anybody who has the complex business affairs that Trump has is obviously... I make this point in my new book, and it's a funny story if I may digress a little bit, but I tried to take a picture of law books for my new book, and the Buffalo Court Library said no, and UB Buffalo Library, where I went to undergrad, they said no. My point was, I wanted people to realize how many law books there are, and I do have a stock photo in my book, and the point I made is, most people could only in a lifetime read a couple of those shelves over there. They wouldn't even know what they meant, frankly. And there's a million law books. I've read maybe 75 in my life, if I'm lucky. So there's so many laws on the books, you couldn't possibly even know what they are. And you've probably violated several if you run a large organization. So sure, they're going to find stuff that is arguably illegal. I don't think these things were illegal. But so the way this thing developed initially, we shouldn't lose sight of how evil that was. And the trial, I think, was a joke. And the trials don't, juries is a great, the jury system is a great idea. But when you have a country that's ideological and you have 80 to 90% of the people in Manhattan are left progressive ideologues, well, ideology is going to trump whatever other consideration that is. But it's the nature of ideology. It's irrational. My theory of ideology is it's emotional. So it's going to override all those other considerations. And that's basically what happened. Combine the fact that the judge ruled for the prosecution and for virtually everything. There's so many ways to attack this trial, not necessarily things that would hold up in court. They're not going to, the appellate division's not going to say, oh, people in Manhattan aren't good jurors, of course. But I can say that as a political critic of the system. So there's many ways to pick this thing apart.
Last thing on the disabilities. So he can definitely run for president, even from jail. That's good to know. What about the states? Do they have the authority to remove him from ballots since they're in charge of their own state elections or no?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's already been ruled on, the various attempts to take him off the ballot because he was an insurrectionist. I think
just for the, because of the convictions, that's a no.
Oh, I know, but it's the same. It's the same. It's the same argument, really. Do the states, can you have one state affect a presidential election? It's supposed to be in 50 states. And the Supreme Court clearly said no. And they would say no this time, too. Okay. I'm not aware of any attempts to take him off the ballot. But again, if that was true, until he has his final appeal, if the sentence is stayed,
that
might be another way to work around that. But yeah, so this is out of the only case out of the four that he could get, that he will be tried, was tried before the election. The others, if you want to talk about those, the thing in Georgia, that seems to be falling apart. And the two federal cases, if Trump wins, the issue is, can he pardon himself? I've made the argument he doesn't have to pardon himself. I think it's the 25th Amendment, whatever it is. He just signs a statement saying, let's say he got convicted in one of these felony federal cases, and he was about to be sentenced. He could sign a statement saying, I'm under a disability because of this case. I'm going to step out of the Oval Office for a minute. And the vice president comes in and pardons him, which is a lot neater. And then the vice president says, okay, Trump would then reassume office about 5 minutes later. So he doesn't have to pardon himself. It's an interesting question. Can he pardon himself? In theory, he can.
I don't know why it's not. Yeah, he can, unless it says he can't in the Constitution. It says he can issue a pardon. So why? Yeah. There's no limit on that.
Lawyers can always conjure up an argument. But I think the best counter argument to the notion that he can't pardon himself is that if he pardons himself and you don't like it, you can always impeach his ass.
Yeah, that's the remedy for a president. Then you convict him outside of office. I think we'll get to those other cases if and when they go to trial. Sure. You mentioned something about a book. Now, do you have a new book out or a new one on the way or both?
It's going to be out. It's going to be out in a couple of days. Everything's done except the cover, and that's the title. I don't know if you can see the title. It's an interesting cover idea. I really like it. It's called Exposing the Two Big Lies of the Gun Control Movement. And I gave a speech at Porkfest last year that laid out this sort of thesis of the book. And I said, I think I can do like an instant book on this concept. Oh, this is a short book. It wasn't a short book. It was really a tough book to write. It's not super long. It was about 30,000 words. But a lot of research went into it, and I crunched some numbers and statistics, which is the core of the book. And the one big lie of the gun control movement, which encompasses the other two, is that because of the Second Amendment, the United States is an unusually violent country. I think that's the core argument of gun control. And I prove in the book, not true. The United States is not an unusually violent country. In fact, the United States, compared to the rest of the world, is an unusually peaceful country. In fact, I have the U.S. ranked 26th out of 165. I'm going to roll that out in the next. I'm announcing it at Porkfest again, Poetic Justice, because that's where I started the idea from. It's June 20th, and I'm going to have a little book party in Buffalo. I'm not exactly sure the release date of the book, but book's done, working on the cover. And I think the reason I like this book is because I've been around so long that I was able to work in all the different threads that I've ever worked in. My political experience comes into it in a way that's I won't really get into now. My legal experience, the fact that I'm a sports statistic freak and I love to crunch numbers because statistics are at the core of the book. I pulled together everything I ever learned in 50 some years of politics. I've been in politics so long, people wouldn't believe it because my father was a judge and I've been in it since I was a teenager. So I pulled together a lot of threads. I got to cite a bunch of people. I even cited Rothbard. What does Rothbard have to do with gun control? He has a fair amount to do with gun control. I worked together a lot of different threads. I think it's a fun book to read. It's not too, without leaving aside the stats, which the stats are not complicated. Basically, what I did is I said, look, there's five different categories of violence in the world. And I was able to find metrics on all of them. And we just crunched the numbers. And what the Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, if you've got something going on in the Buffalo area, then let me know. It's always good to see you. And this time it won't be for some Libertarian Party event because, frankly, I'm not in the mood right now. I'm sure I'll get sucked back in maybe next year or the year after, but not right. I'd rather go to a James Ostrowski book release party.
It'll be fun. They're always fun. I had a friend of mine who wrote a novel, and I said, Marty, when's your book party? It's like the whole point of, I drive people crazy. The whole point of having a book, you say have a book party, you got to have a book party. I spent 8 months on this thing, and I have a lot of my base of support is in Buffalo. Most of my books are sold nationally, but I do have some very good friends in Buffalo. I figure we'll give them a free drink and we'll give them a short speech, and hopefully they'll get a kick out of the book. So I'm excited about it. I worked on it. It's much harder than I thought it was going to be. You never know when you start the book. Is this going to be an easy one? Is it going to be a hard one? I've had some ridiculously easy books, which I won't tell anybody about how easy they were to write because I want people to buy the books, right? It was a real struggle. Now, I've had some easy ones. This one was not easy. This one was a struggle, but I finally got it done. I'm excited about it. And I think it's going to deal a blow, a serious blow to the gun control movement, which I think their arguments are full of crap, frankly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Looking forward to it. We'll get back together and talk about the book once it's available for people to buy. Absolutely. And Jim, always great. Thanks for stopping by again. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun, as always.
All right, friends, that's going to do it for today. Just a few reminders to stop by TomMullenTalksFreedom.com/support and check out all the ways that you can support my efforts here, including joining my Patreon or my Substack. And if you haven't already, make sure that you go to itsthefedstupid.com to download a copy of my free ebook, It's the Fed Stupid. And as always, if you like the music you've heard here on Tom Mullen Talks Freedom, you can hear more at tommullensings.com. Thanks for listening.
The War of Ideas has only just begun. Arm yourself with the knowledge you need by heading to TomMullenTalksFreedom.com and subscribing to our email list. And remember, every revolution starts in the minds of the people.